provided you with a writing pad and a pen. We'll request you, if you have written something there, you leave the pen behind you. It will be much appreciated. We will then, as different honorable members, ask questions. If there's a question that you are not too clear about it, don't hesitate to ask honorable member to repeat herself or himself on the question. And the glass of water with compliments from Parliament in a bottle. Yamuti, welcome once more. The interview is not going to take much long. It's intended to be less than an hour, even less than 45 minutes. But based on your responses then, it will be determined. We are not suppressing you by any means. Honorable members, may we introduce ourselves? Honorable Velma.
Good morning. I'm Wilma Neodruchen. Good day. And I'm representing the AC, the interpreter of voicing for me is Trudy. And Trudy Tiennison, thanks.
Honorable Mwabe, we are a subcommittee of the portfolio committee. You may introduce yourself.
Yes, thanks, Chair. Morning, Mr. Mutlala. As the chair said, I'm honorable Mwabe.
Andrikus van der Beeshuizen.
Good morning, sir. My name is Mervyn Dirks.
My name is Matala Ntombela.
Good morning, sir. I'm Mr. Minister, because I'm a member of this committee.
My name is Manale Soma, acting chair for this program. May you, Dr. Mutlala, may you, Dr. Mutlala, just take us quickly in terms of introducing yourself. We have received your CV. However, I would like just to hear within a 2 minutes time introducing yourself. Who is the really Dr. Mutlala? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. As you said, the CV is explaining.
This black thing that is written top behind you, next to you, you press it. After you finish, you press it, and it's going to be off. I'm sorry about that. I should have advised you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I am Jack Matala. I worked in the public service for 10 years, and I was also in the legislature for 10 years. I was the chairperson of SCOPA. I was in the Department of Safety and Security doing monitoring and evaluation and the activities of the South African Police Service. I was an executive assistant to the MEC in the Premier's office and in the Department of Safety and Security in Limpopo. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Mutlala. Honorable Velma, number one.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning once again. I've got two simple questions. Can you explain to us what your understanding is of the values and principles enshrined in the Constitution, Section 195? Can you mention a few and elaborate? And then secondly, because I do know that you're already from your CV, I see that you have been in the public service. Can you explain to me the functions of the Public Service Commissions? Thank you.
Over to you, Dr. Mutlala. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you, Honorable Member, for raising that question. The democratic values and principles that are enshrined in the Constitution must all of them permeate through the structures of the public service, all of them, but including high professional ethics. The high professional ethics must be promoted. We want public service that will be development orientated. We want public service that will have a good management of the human resource and other resources in the public service. We want the efficiency, economic and effective use or utilization of these resources, basically to address three important issues that are also contained in the National Development Plan, that is to reduce poverty, inequality and unemployment. And we're going to use these values to guide our conduct in addressing the three elements I've mentioned, that is reducing the reduction of poverty, inequality and unemployment. So the with regard to the Public Service Commission, I can say the relationship of Public Service Commission and public service is that of a sharpener and a pencil. Because a sharpener is there to sharpen the pencil, for the pencil to be able to write properly. That is the relationship that I see between the Public Service Commission and the public service. And the public service itself must maintain those standards. The public service cannot escape the principles, the democratic principles and values that are enshrined in Section 195 of the Constitution. That is to ensure that we adhere, the public service also adhere to the high standard of professionalism. There must be career development, create public service to be a learning organization, to be a career, to be an employer of choice. And that's how, for now, I can try to explain this.
Thank you, Honorable Motlala, Honorable Mr. Motlala, Honorable
Mwabe.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, the chairperson. But Mr. Motlala was at some stage honorable for 10 years, so the chair is not that much wrong. Just before I ask my question, I would make a comment on your CV, Mr. Motlala. I assume you are a very senior person. As you have said to us that you have also worked for 10 years in state departments and also in offices of the MEC and as an MPL as well. But when I look at your CV, it should portray that. Page 1, when you speak of your work experience, you say you have served public service for 10 years and also 10 years in provincial legislature. Underneath that, it's a position, child care worker, Limpopo Department of Health. It doesn't sound well. It doesn't sound professional. You can't be immediately after saying you're a member of the provincial legislature. When you put in the position there, you say child care worker. I thought you were going to say whip or chief whip or something. If you say child care worker now, it disturbs the thinking. But my question would be, in your own view, what can be the best strategy to assist the Public Service Commission in ensuring that the government's department appoints competent, suitable public servants, especially in senior positions? What strategy can be used in making sure that the PC performs its duties? Thanks, Chair.
Mr. Matlala.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Member who raised the question. You raised the issue of the CV as a starting point. Yes, at the beginning when I've entered the public service. That's what I did. We're working in that facility at the beginning. And later I was doing all those other things I've mentioned, including the legislature. So to help the public service to appoint suitable and relevant public servants at a senior position. Firstly, that the public service must be impersonal. We should build a meritocratic institution, an institution that is based on merit and not anything related, in particular the kingship. And I should think that I will agree with one of the writers of in this field, Francis Fukuyama, when he said society, we always had a public service in society, but it has evolved from the earlier stages of tribal emperor state dynasties. It was basically based on who knows who, the kinship, who is related to who. But later when society evolved to the state level, where I think we are, is that a feature that distinguishes that transition is when we start to appoint people based on merit. And then we qualify to be a democratic state, a developmental state. And if we do anything that is not like that, and we must be very intolerant of anything that will suggest that we compromise the meritocracy, the merit. I think that is key for me, to appoint people at that level. Obviously, we look at the aspect of education, aspect of managerial experience, and the exposure of this particular individual who's going to occupy that senior and strategic. A person who will think strategically, like a general. The word, by the way, strategy, comes from military. Strategic management is actually, in literal sense, a plan of a general to win a war and benefit from the outcome of that war. And in our case, is to win a war against poverty, against inequality, against unemployment. So we need that kind of approach when we appoint the senior public servant. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Matlala. Honorable Van Dijk-Hazen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Mr. Matlala. Mm-hmm. Mr. Matlala, you've now used the word developmental. And in terms of the National Development Plan, we would like to see the state being more developmentally focused. Now, what are the challenges in your mind that hinder the public service or the public administration in potentially releasing that developmental state, in achieving that goal of the developmental state? What would you say is the hindering that?
Thank you, Honourable Member, Mr. Machado.
Thank you very much, Chair. I agree with the question raised by Honorable West is, firstly, that in today's world, there are also three elements which are very important for a development state to run and run effectively and to qualify to be called as such, is the capability of the state, is the rule of law, is democratic accountability. These three things. So a developmental state must first of all be capable to to make necessary and strategic interventions in growing the economy, in equipping the citizens with the necessary skills that can be appreciated in the economy. And the developmental state must actually rescue itself from tendencies of what I can call taking the bribes, working on the bribes from the lower level to the highest level. That will hinder the state. Obviously, I've said the practice of appointments in key positions in the state, for example, must be based on merit. It must be a machine that will be able to understand the challenges that are facing the society in which the economy nowadays is not doing well. Generally, the profit margins are very minimal. So this state, understanding that, must make sure that there's effective and efficient utilization of the resources, avoid wastages in the public service, because it's one of the things that if we build white elephants, obviously that state will not be capable to transform the society and take the society to the next level. So I think the developmental state, obviously, another important component is to work within the rule of law, a very critical matter. And this state must be able to account, move away from hierarchical bureaucratic approach, bring people at the center of almost everything that they would like to achieve. And if we can do away with the silo thinking like that, involve people in processes of decision making, they know their problems. They are the ones to best articulate the challenges that are faced by them, especially the poor. And in the strategic management processes of the developmental state, expressions from the poor people must be found in that. So in that way, I think a developmental state will be unleashed to reduce poverty, inequality, and unemployment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Matlala. Honorable Shemo.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Matlala. I looked at your CV and appreciate the fact that you have been in public service and in political leadership, and so you've got a perspective on both sides of the coin. Now, one of the challenges which public service is faced with are high levels of political interference in the due processes. Now, when I look at your CV, if I were to now phone your reference, one of the challenges that I would have is that of the three that you have listed, they're all politicians. And so do you think that is favorable in terms of us being able to broaden our understanding and getting to know you better vis-a-vis the challenge of political interference? So, but in the main, my question is then, what do you think are the causes of political interference in public service? And what, in your view, would you think are action steps that need to be taken to curb that type of practice in public service? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chair, and let me also thank the question from the Honorable Member. Very important question. In the Westminster system, when you are appointed as the Speaker of the House, you immediately relinquish your position so that you can be neutral. And you look at me at this stage in terms of those positions, I'm nowhere. But the most important thing is the question of impartiality. You must have you must appreciate, you must love impartiality when it comes to public service. Because that public service, it belongs to the society, it belongs to the state, and it will forever be there. For example, in a democratic state, political parties will come and go, but public service will remain. And what should guide, in particular senior civil servants, is to appreciate the law, the concept of impartiality. It is very, very, very much important to appreciate impartiality so that you don't take, you are not even hindered by all those things you have mentioned. So I am saying that we must build a public service that will be career developmental oriented. It must be a learning organization. It must be an organization, an employer of choice that should be impartial in delivering services to our people. And you must understand the rules. If you are a human being, if you are a South African citizen today, at one stage you will be required to do this, at one stage you will be required to do that. But what is critical is to draw the line and be honest. Be honest, be faithful, and believe in what you are doing. And if you want to see South Africa moving from the third world condition to the first world conditions, one of the requirements will be to build a public service that will be impartial, very highly professional. And in history it happens. Singapore was able to move from conditions of third world world to the first only in 30 years. So I don't see any contradiction when South Africans are able to play these roles. Because if you are not in prison, it's not a death sentence to play a particular role at a particular time and be given an opportunity to play a role in another sector. So that's how I see and I want to understand these things. Let me.
Thank you,
Chairperson. The question that I would like to come clarity from you on is regarding the financial disclosure framework in the public sector. We've been facing currently a challenge with the compliance rate in the public service regarding compliance. We have a serious problem with senior managers, let alone junior officials, disclosing financial interests. Now, if you are the commissioner, what advice would you give to the public service on how to intensify this disclosure that officials need to disclosure? And also, if you can tell us, why do you think that financial disclosure is really key in the public sector? And if you also can give us maybe one example on how this disclosure works, financial disclosure. You understand how does the financial disclosure work can give us an example, and also your views on how you actually get officials to intensify this, that officials must disclose. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Mr. Matlala.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Member. The disclosure of public servants, they must disclose to avoid conflict of interest. And I think it's key. The conflict of interest, we must address it very seriously. But I will also couple your question with also a concern I have about the work of the Public Service Commission, in particular the recommendations of the public service. They are not being taken seriously. They will rather fear or consider the AG's report than public service. And when the public service is actually the engine, it tells you how to run public service professionally. So these two things, you're talking about the compliance. How do we enforce the compliance? Obviously, leaders in the public service must manage the downward and the upward. The upward in this instance should be the executive. We must find a buy-in from the executive so that when we come up with programs, a program or a system to force senior managers to disclose, we should be having enjoying the buy-in of the executive, even the portfolio committees of parliament and legislatures must support the endeavor by the managers in the public service to force their colleagues to disclose the financial interest of these people. So the recommendations of the public service, both the executive and the parliament and legislatures must also help in terms of ensuring that we force these senior managers to actually comply. There will be different measures if you want, I don't know whether it will be appropriate, tough measures to ensure that all public senior public servants have disclosed their financial interests to avoid conflict of interest. And if it does not happen, I want to put it before the committee, we should begin to engage even the security establishment, because a conflict of interest when there is a financial loss is a very serious matter that I should think other organs of the state must also come to help in this regard. That's how I think we should handle the issue of recommendations and measures coming from Public Service Commission not being taken seriously. We must elevate, must raise the bar, especially when it comes to people doing business with the state who are public servants. If people want to make money, want to become rich, they'll rather go to business. You are free to do business, become rich in the private sector, for example. Yeah, I think that's how we'll approach the matter.
Thank you, Mr. Matlala. Honorable Thomas.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much, Chair. Ndate Matlala knows that the political administrative interface is one of the most important to, in as far as the health of any department is concerned, especially the public service. So how it is handled is very much critical. I see in your CV you mentioned conflict management as one of your competencies and skills. So I would like you to state or just mention how would you deal with this so that you ultimately have a cordial relationship within the department and enhances the performance of that particular department. But I must also mention that I went through the workshops that you attended. I do not see a place where you acquired the skills. So I'm interested in knowing how you acquired the competency and the skills of conflict management. And my last part of the chair is that I would like you to also make mention in your response how you see transformation of gender parity in the public service. I see that you once attended a conference of women in China. So I'm very interested in a man who attends conferences of women to know what was taking place. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm sure that you are not going to walk us to China, but you'll just be precise in terms of your responses.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, appreciate. Let me just indulge a bit. The Honorable Member's question, let me get it clear. The interface between, are you referring to the interface between maybe the executive authority and the HOD, or what are you referring to?
One of the The tension that arises in many instances in a department, public service, is the tension that arises because of interference of a politician into administrative issues, or vice versa for that matter, where you find an administrator saying, but this is not your domain, or a politician says, but you're interfering in what does not belong to you. So that creates tension. So with the skills that you have, what recommendations would you make in order to solve a problem of this nature? Because this is one pillar in any department that you can come across. Thank you,
Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable Member, for repeating that question, which is very, very much important. Firstly, in the public service, there must be very clear in terms of the roles. Who does what? Very important. And one of the things that I know and should happen, and others have not been using, is that we are administering within the context of the law. If the HOD feels that anything that comes from the member of the executive is outside the law, outside the role and the function of the executive council, that very same executive officer must put that in writing to the HOD. And once you have role clarifications at the level of structural arrangement, I don't see why other will want to interfere with the other offices. But in reality, others have been trying to, especially when it comes to tendering processes when it comes to recruitment of personnel, the promotion. I know that sometimes the high offices have got a tendency to interview, and that corrupt our system, and we should not allow it. In terms of the skills that can be applied, the application of the skills of conflict management. Obviously, in that instance, you have a situation where if that executive officer is not or is giving problems to the HOD, obviously we'll have the premier near who can come and try to mediate between the two. As I know that in the public service, contracts, the senior officer, HODs, for example, premier's got a role in that. So obviously in that case, at that high level, or between the minister or the DG, the president will do that. The HOD must seek for help, for mediation, for somebody senior to come and neutral to come and try to intervene in that case. But what is key and what is law? The spirit of the law says the office, the political office, must put that directive in writing to the HOD. I will not bog you down or delay you about the history of China, the emperors and the dynasties, but with regard to the gender, what we are saying is that 50% of employment of women in the senior position must be adhered to. It must be adhered to, as well as the 2% of the people living with a disability. It's a rule, we must adhere to it, we must enforce it, and by now in 20 years' time, we should be knowing, even at this committee, where we are. Because we should know whether we are in the third quarter of achieving that, or we are in the middle or in the first quarter of achieving that by now. And if it has not happened, it will mean that interventions and measures and directives that we'll have to come up with will be to fast track the realization of that objective. And that's how I think we should.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mtala. Honorable Tuwaza.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you for coming. From 2009 to 2014, according to your curriculum vitae, you were chairperson of a standing committee on public accounts. You mentioned that one of your tasks was to ensure economic efficiency, effective usage of the resources appropriated to the different government departments, which is very true. Now my question is, 2010, Limpopo administration was taken over by the National Treasury, and you were chair there. What were your contributions? How did you handle that? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Matlala, over to you.
Unfortunately, when it happened, Section 100, when the minister applied Section 100 in our province, I was not yet a chairperson, I was just a committee member. My being coming into chairing the SCOPA was part of rectifying the Section 100 issues until the new administration came into being in the province under the leadership of Ntate Chukwu Stan Matavadi.
Sorry, Chairperson. According to the CV, it's 2009 to 2014. the Section 100 I'm talking about is the one that was put in place in 2010, okay, by National Treasury.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The 2009 that is written there, it should be mentioned in the term that I was there in the legislature, and with different roles. But as I said later, that is what happened. I came into that position.
Sorry, Chairperson. Okay. So in other words, you are saying the date that you've written there is inaccurate, it's not correct, it's not right. Because my question is based on what is written in your CV, that you were there, a chairperson of SCOPA from 2009. And now you are saying the 2009 that is written here, I don't know what is it about it. And I am saying to you, 2010, National Treasury took over the administration according to Section 100. Now, just clarify whether is that a wrong date, it was written by mistake, and tell us exactly what were your contributions.
Probably, Mr. Motlala and Honorable Dubasa, probably may live with that, because in 2004 to May 2009, he was also the Deputy Chief Whip of the majority party. That means that he can also respond to the question. As a matter of principle. Can I repeat myself? I'm saying, from the question in terms of the date, we may live with the dates as you are saying them, because what is good in your CV also, you were a Deputy Chief Whip of Limpopo Legislature in 2004 to 2009 May. So that means then the question that she's asking, you are in a better position also even to respond to it, regardless of the years. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, we were very much part of that 2010 intervention. We were there in the committees, we were there in the legislatures, and we kept on trying to get the departments not to engage in the wasteful, irregular spending. And the reason why also the intervention of the national authority was sought was because of those recommendations we were making as part of the legislature. We were raising these issues sharply, and I think the end results of our noise was for the national authority to come into our province and try to correct all those issues.
Chairperson, thank you. You know, Mr. Matlala, in your competencies and your skills, you are saying to us you are one kind of a person who is capable of monitoring and evaluating. What you're saying to me, it doesn't tell me what you're saying, because that the issue I'm talking about, several times National Treasury went there, Standing Committee on Finance National went there, you were there, nothing was done. Now, I am saying, based on the position that you have applied for it today, it needs that kind of a skill. Now, tell us exactly, what are you talking about when you're saying we must look at you as a person who has got a skill of monitoring, because you've got finance, and where is that? Because right now I can't pick it up.
How about you, sir?
I agree with the Honourable Member. She's spot on, because monitoring evaluation does not come at the end. It is very much part of the process at the beginning, throughout the processes and towards the end. I know that there is a formative evaluation at the beginning, at the conceptualization level, and also the summative evaluation at the end, looking at the cost benefit. But it may be that there were some shortfalls, like it can always happen in terms of monitoring evaluation, even in terms of the recommendations that you always want to make to the powers that be. By the way, you are not the one who is at the end of the day taking decisions to use the money in government, in the public service. But I know that the fallback with regard to members of the legislature was to withdraw the budget from those departments. So I agree that, like it always happens, it can always happen with any monitoring and evaluation process, that you can engage in that process, give advices, give recommendations, but at the end of the day, people that you are giving those recommendations, they should also buy in on the other side. So that's how I see it, that it becomes some sort of a shortfall when it comes to monitoring and evaluation. At the end of the day, you are not the one who's going to implement those recommendations. You give them those recommendations, and even try to force, as the legislature try to force the resolution of the scope. But at the end of the day, really, it lies with the powers that be. And I don't want to take it to the level that the people obviously will respond during the elections. Thanks.
No, thank you so much, Mr. Mtala. Just from my side, based on your responses to the questions, and also from an assumption that you have gone through the mandate of the Public Service Commission, you have gone through their reports, the last 2 years, I don't want to say the latest one, which is 2015-16, but the 14-15, in terms of their performance and on their areas of focus. What value add do you think that you can bring if you get fortunately be appointed as one of the commissioners? What value add, different value add?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Yes, I've looked at their reports, even the 2015-2016 reports, I've gone through it. The old story of public service recommendations not being adhered to. I'm sure it's one area that from here we must make sure that we come up with a very implementable short medium program. You can add long if you like, to ensure that the recommendations of public service are implemented. But there's a question of doing things differently and adding value. The issues of innovation, which must be inbuilt in the way in which government must conduct its business. The envisaged dedicated innovation offices in the premier's offices in the provinces will come in handy to ensure that we bring an element of doing things differently and adding value in our conduct. I'm sure it's one of the things that the Public Service Commission must really go and implement, so that we maximize the human potential. We are operating in an ever-changing environment, and we cannot say we have trained public servants, finish, it's over, and we are done. From time to time, we must be a learning organization. From time to time, we must ensure that we equip public service with necessary and new skills imposed by the challenges from the ever-changing environment. Move away from doing things in the olden way of just thinking that management is about planning, organizing, controlling. We must bring an element of coaching and mentoring And by the way, public service is a labor-intensive structure. It's about people management. And in today's world, I know, for organizations to have the high results, we must clearly link the human capital management with the bottom line results of the organizations. The end results, the HR is no longer, for example, should no longer be treated as an additional by the way thing. It must be very much be part of the strategic management of the department. I know that in the NDP, the National Development Plan of Vision 2030, envisages a situation in public service where even the HR matter will now be elevated to the office of the HOD, because it is very much part of the end results, the bottom line results in any organization. It happens in the private sector, it's happening in the public sector. I'm aware that the demands are increasing in society for department to deliver services. And I've said that we're operating in an environment where profit margins are very minimal. The effective and efficiency and usage of resources becomes very important, financial, human capital, IT, for example. Something which is very, very critical in today's world. If your IT, the IT is governing the world today, for sure those companies.
You know what, when I'm Mr. Mklala, it was going to be nice if you looked at the chairperson when you, so that I don't become rude. Yes, you have responded to my question. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you.
Having said that, is there any comment, question that you'd like to pose to the panel from your side? It could be related, though, to the interview, not the Limpopo and China one.
I would want to know about the immediate thing that the Public Service Commission...
I want to know from the Honorable Committee the immediate things that must be done in the Public Service Commission from here, just to leave here having this understanding. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. I will ask honourable members to respond if there's any volunteer. But having said that, you made a commitment that you have read the last financial year's report, which would have indicated that. Nevertheless, honourable Mnabo, you want to chip in and respond, and then we can close.
Yeah, thank you, Chair.
And press the button, sir.
Yeah. It's on. No, Mr. Mutlala, it would be very unfair for us to respond to that question, because it should form part of your own program of action should you be appointed. Now, don't ask us to give you a lunchbox of some sort if you get appointed.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Any other member, I think, would suffice the response. Having said that, that sounds like there is no other question from your side. You are satisfied. From our side, we'd like to really appreciate your time to come for the interview. And we wish you all the luck. In due course, you'll hear from us through the administration in terms of how did we feel like in terms of your presentation as it may, the normal routine of HR processes when you undergo this process. All the best. And take care of yourself.